1:40. We are we're a little slow. House ran over today. We heard a lot of testimony about one bill, and some of us contributed to that, so we'll have to be careful about being too critical of the testimony we had on the one bill. Two of us are here, sat quietly by and didn't complicate the process or compound it. At any rate, we are, is the mic on?
Yes.
We are in session, and with that, we are going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 940A. And Sandy, would you help us with an understanding here?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 940 comes over from the Senate side with the 27 aye, no votes, and 3 excused. The bill is requiring a sheriff to fix a date for foreclosure. It's allowing a former owner whose property has been foreclosed and sold in a foreclosure sale for failure to pay an irrigation district assessment 90 days to redeem the property by paying the amount of the purchase money paid for the property at the sheriff's sale, interest on the purchase money at the rate of 9% per annum, and grantees of the former owner, holders, or equitable or legal title, and liens upon the land to exercise the right of redemption. It applies to foreclosure sales after the effective date of this act. There's no fiscal, no revenue impact, and there's no subsequent referral on the bill. And at this time, I have no amendments, Mr. Chair.
And we have Christina McNitt from Water Resource Congress, who is going to explain to us why we should pass this bill.
Or not pass this?
Or not pass the bill, right.
Well, I hope not. Good afternoon, committee. For the record, my name is Christina McNitt, and I'm representing the Oregon Water Resources Congress, which, as you know, is a trade association of primarily special districts organized to deliver irrigation water. Senate Bill 940A, I think my testimony, written testimony, is pretty specific. I'll just give you the top notes. We view it as a sweet little bill. Interestingly enough, under state statute, irrigation districts have the authority to actually foreclose on a property in the event that a water user is not paying their water use fees. But we're specifically prohibited from providing a right of redemption period, which is unusual and is not similar to any other foreclosure statutes that other special districts have under their authority. So what Senate Bill 940 would do is provide a 90-day right of redemption for a landowner to come settle up after the sheriff's sale, to come settle up, pay the fees, and keep their land. The second thing that Senate Bill 940 does is it allows the sheriff to set the date of the sheriff's sale. Right now in statute, also contrary to other foreclosure statutes, the court actually sets the date of the sheriff's sale. So especially in smaller communities, if the notice in the newspaper is not published in a timely manner, or if the sheriff is sick, or if there's an emergency or something occurs so that sale cannot occur at the time that the court set it, then you actually have to go back to court to have a new date set rather than working with the sheriff and giving the sheriff discretion to set that sale, as the sheriff has discretion in other foreclosure proceedings. So that really is the extent of the bill. We hope that it provides a little more equity to the landowners. We don't view as the districts that it's really fair to not provide a right of redemption period.
Representative Cromwell, questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I have a couple of questions, if I may. Christina, generally, how much is property sold for? I mean, is it usually for the price of the of whatever's owed to the water district in terms of back fees and that sort of thing, or
Mr. Chair and members, I don't have a specific number for you. You'll see in my testimony I was too cheap to reprint it. But last week when Bill Ganon was up from Klamath, I had anticipated that he would testify with me, and he could probably give you some real-world experiences. In fact, he's the one who brought this forward. But typically, Representative Kremel, people pay, in addition to what is owed to the district, they actually pay a value for the land when they're purchasing it. So the landowner would have to pay back whatever the purchaser paid plus a 9% interest. So, for example, a lot of times some of the fees that a landowner may owe the district might be $5,000, which really isn't much if you're being foreclosed on maybe 10 or 15 acres of land, which would be worth considerably more than $5,000.
Mr. Chair, if I may, that's precisely what I'm concerned about is, But right now they can't do anything, right? I mean, if it's foreclosed on, if my property is foreclosed on and you buy it, you own it, and I have to basically evacuate, move off, get away, right?
Mr. Chair and members, that is correct, although I think there have been some instances where the parties have gone back to court and claimed that the judgment was inequitable and the court actually agreed with that. But again, it causes more expense for the district and for the landowners, and if we just had a right of redemption period, then both parties would be saved from going through that. It really is, frankly, kind of ridiculous that a district would go through that process and not provide a landowner the ability to redeem for something like $5,000 for a $5,000 fee.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Brown.
Christina, how far in arrears are they before they file a lien? Are they years behind or months behind? Or?
Mr. Chair and members, I might have to get a certifiably smart person up here to answer that. I'm not exactly sure.
Certifiably smart.
Now we're going to put her on the spot. I could have paid you to ask that question.
For the record, Anita Winkler with the Oregon Water Resources Congress. I have to do, in good faith, a disclaimer. I'm not certifiably smart. My understanding is, in answer to both of your questions, typically these the foreclosure amount for the district is from $2,000 to maybe $10,000 in extreme. That's what they owe the district. Most districts don't let it go beyond a couple of years because it just begins to accumulate. And there's an issue of if they're not paying the district, then should they be getting the water? And you get into a real miserable mess if you let it go very long. So they move within a couple of years.
Following. And so if this bill was to pass, then you had the right of redemption, the landowner would just pay the back fees to the district plus cost, probably cost of sale and any other associated costs there. And if there was more dollars than what was owed to the water district, the sheriff probably holds that in escrow for that 90 days.
Chair Jensen, Representative Brown, if the property owner wants to redeem after the sheriff's sale, that property owner has to make whole the purchaser of the property. So if it's kind of a, I was going to say a triangle, but I mean it's maybe even more rectangular by the time it's done. The property owner hasn't paid. The district has foreclosed for the amount owed to the district and court costs and all that kind of good stuff. Then the sheriff sets a sale and sells it to yet another party. It could be the district. Typically, the district does not buy the property because they don't want to be a property owner and have to deal with all of that. So they sold it to a third party. So say you start out with a $2,000 debt to the district. You add on some of the other fees, and suddenly you're at $3,000. Somebody could walk in and buy it for $3,000. That money is held by the sheriff. My thought would be that's going to be held for 90 days to give that property owner a chance to redeem. If you walk in on the 60th day and you pay the amount of that sale plus all the other costs that have incurred, so now your bill's creeping up a little bit more because there's some other costs that have occurred as part of that sale. Then the district is reimbursed for the money due them plus the cost they've incurred. The property owner is made whole and everybody walks away. Does that help explain it, I hope?
Yeah, I think so.
Members, there's language related to that on page 2 of the bill, lines 3 through 6.
Mr.
Do we have any other questions for that?
I have a question, Mr. Chair. I'm just curious, since this bill was sponsored by the Committee on Judiciary, how come, do you know why it, did it have a hearing in Judiciary in the Senate? What committee was it heard in the Senate?
Representative Dingfeld and Mr. Chair, the committee, the Judiciary Committee in the Senate did consider this bill. And for whatever reason, it was referred to Water Committee on the House side.
Because it's a water bill.
Hmm?
I said, because it's a water bill.
Are there other questions for the distinguished panel?
Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. Is there anyone else that would like to offer us wisdom on Senate Bill 940A? Water for Life is not...
Oh, I have just a comment, if I may.
Well, we're in public hearing, but I'll accept the comment. Yes.
I'm very pleased that it went through one of the Judiciary Committees, because I'm not familiar with the foreclosure law, and I don't know whether the language on the top of page 2 is sufficient or not, but if it went through one of the Judiciary Committees, I'm assuming that they thought it was.
One would like to assume that, however, Representative, before we do a work session, be assured that we will have Legislative Council here to advise us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I didn't realize I was asking for that, but this sounds like an excellent idea to me.
You read your mind.
Well, I don't know that you weren't, you were, or that you weren't, but appreciate your comment, then. That's hearing no other questions and or discussion on Senate Bill 940, we will close our public hearing on Senate Bill 940 and schedule a work session for Senate Bill 940 to be 1 week from today. And the next thing on our agenda then will be to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 185. Senate Bill 185, Sandy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 185 engrossed comes to us from the Senate side with 25 aye votes, no noes, and 5 excused. It clarifies that a holder of a supplemental water right will not be subject to forfeiture of that water right for non-use if the reason for the non-use is that the primary water right associated with the supplemental right in question has been leased or set aside for in-stream use. The amendment on the Senate side was simply that it added an emergency clause. And at this time, I have no amendments. And, Mr. Chair, for the record, Doug Myers came up to me before the hearing started and verbally said that Water Watch is okay with Senate Bill 185A.
Okay. And do we have anyone that is signed up to talk? Oh, Mr. Sussman from the Water Resources Department. Good afternoon, Adam.
Good afternoon. We have some...
Please proceed.
Good afternoon. For the record, I'm Adam Sussman. I'm with the Oregon Department of Water Resources, and I appreciate the opportunity to be able to testify on Senate Bill 185. I want to make 3 points and just kind of walk right through this. And the first point, I want to just sort of step back and help the committee understand that there are many water users in the state that have more than one water right. Typically, they have a primary water right, which we call it typically from surface water, and then often they'll have what we call a supplemental water right, either from stored water or from groundwater, which is made to make up a deficiency in supply. So that's what a supplemental water right is. The second point is that under current law, since 1987, a water right holder can lease all or a portion of their water right in stream. And this leasing opportunity provides an opportunity to resource stream flow, and at the same time provides an opportunity for water users to increase their water use management, because if you lease your water right in stream, that constitutes a beneficial use of water, and if you're concerned about forfeiture, for an example, you can lease your water right in stream and potentially restart the forfeiture clock. So we got supplemental water rights. We have an opportunity to lease a water right in stream. And my third point is that in many cases, the supplemental water right cannot be leased in stream, which raises concerns about non-use and forfeiture of that supplemental water right. For example, that supplemental water right might be stored water or groundwater again. And this concern about the status of the supplemental water right is a potential impediment to individuals wanting to lease their water in stream. So those are the three main points that brought this bill to the forefront from the department. This is a department pre-session filed bill with no fiscal impact. And the punchline, if you will, is that this bill would address that concern by simply modifying the statute, ORS 540-610, to ensure that the statute is clear that while the primary water right is leased in stream, the supplemental water right would be considered excused non-use, if you will. And in fact, if you look at the bill, there's a whole list of opportunities for excused non-use, and this would add the letter N to the list of excused non-use under ORS 540-610. And again, we have shared this bill with stakeholders throughout the process. We're not aware of any opposition to the bill. It passed handily through the Senate, and in fact, as Sandy mentioned, the only amendment to the bill in the Senate was to add an emergency clause because Senator Beyer thought it would be a good idea to ensure that if this, in fact, was a concern, that we resolve it as quickly as possible. And that concludes my testimony, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a beginner's question, so answer it accordingly, if you would, please. Supplemental water right, if I understood you correctly, is one that you used to fill in if your primary water right is not fully available. What do you do during years or maybe decades when the primary water right is fully available and you don't use the supplemental water right?
Chair Jensen, Representative Barnhart, actually that's a really excellent question, not a beginner question, and there's a provision in the statute when you're thinking about forfeiture that asks the question, are you ready, willing, and able to use your supplemental water right? And when you have a supplemental water right and you're simply not using it because your primary is always available, let's say it's groundwater, you'd likely have a well sitting there and you'd likely have a pump in it and you'd be ready, willing, and able to go. The problem is you're not supposed to and legally should not be using your supplemental water right until your primary becomes deficient, okay? If your primary water right is leased in stream, you may not be, and this is sort of the million-dollar question, you may not be ready, willing, and able to use your supplemental water right, hence we need this clarification.
Yeah, you've raised a very interesting catch-22
yes.
in the statute. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Other questions for Adam?
Help me out a little bit, Adam. I'm having difficulty understanding this. I have a primary water right, and I lease it in stream. For compensation or not,
Larry Campbell.
And Then I don't use, I can't use supplemental language. Is that right?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
As long as it's in stream, or as long as I am not using the primary water right, there's no way I can use the supplemental water right.
Mr. Chair, that's correct in two different ways. One is if you lease your primary in stream, then you can no longer use the supplemental, because then you would be taking one water right and making it into two, essentially, which would be considered an enlargement of a water right by sort of separating them. And the second part of your question, that's correct. You're supposed to use the primary supply until it becomes deficient. And I think maybe a good example of this problem in particular that comes to mind is in the Deschutes Basin, where a number of individuals may have a primary water right from the Deschutes River, and they may have a supplemental water right from one of the storage projects, and they may have a contract with the Bureau of Reclamation, as an example, and they may have their primary water right leased in stream, and they're sort of staying their use of the stored water, as an example, and they want to be sure when they're going through this leasing opportunity that they're not somehow jeopardizing the validity of that stored water right. That would be an example.
Now, I'm having difficulty, though, with why one needs a supplemental water right if they are leasing water in stream. I'm having difficulty understanding why they ever got a supplemental water right if they're, you know, leasing water in stream, or why the supplemental doesn't go away when they lease the water in stream.
Well, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, again, they have just sort of over a long period of time, they've obtained the supplemental water right so that they have a water supply in times of shortage, or in fact they may rely on that supplemental water right each year late in the season. Okay? And the supplemental water right has been issued like a regular water right. It's appurtenant to the property and is a permit or water right that is forever. The leasing of the water right, of the primary water right in stream, is a temporary measure that can't exceed 5 years. It can be renewed. And so, of course, that landowner wants to retain that supplemental water right parked, if you will, on their property until the lease is unwound, and that could be within 1 year or 5 years.
But in the meantime, it leases it in stream for 5 years, turns around then and releases it in stream for another 5 years, and then turns around and releases it for another 5 years, and we've tied up 15 years of supplemental water rights that might otherwise have been available to other water users in the area, in the basin.
Well, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I understand your point, and in a large storage project, if the supplemental stored water wasn't being called upon by individual landowners, you know, my guess is that the physical water would sort of be available to a larger pool of water users, or would simply be passed into the river and be considered what we would call natural or live flow in the river. But your point is well taken. I think that the majority of the leases you'll find are not of the variety that are leased in stream 5 years and another 5 years and another 5 years. But they tend to be a much shorter duration than that, and that an individual with that sort of valuable stored water component, you know, may try to address that asset that they have, if you will, if they were going to be leasing their water continually. So I think your point's well taken, but I'm not sure it's, at least in my opinion, a huge concern in terms of tying up stored water in the state of Oregon.
Only one concern, Adam, and that's mine.
I understand, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you. This, I think, is by way of follow-up, if I understand the chair's question. Would the, in the example that we're talking about, would the supplemental water right then be available to junior holders, junior to the person who's leased their primary water right into the stream, so that in a year of scarcity in which the water right holder that's leased into the stream is not using their water because it's leased into the stream, junior holders of the supplemental water right would then have water to use because the water right holder that has leased into the stream is not using either the in-stream water right or the supplemental water right for that year. Now, am I right about that, or have I misthought, have I not thought it through correctly in some way?
Well, Chair Jensen and Representative Barnhart, there's many different reservoirs that are managed in many different ways, and some reservoirs may have way more water stored than is appropriated, and some may be a lot tighter. Okay, so it's sort of hard to answer that question in a blanket fashion. But either way, I would agree that, in terms of managing that stored water, hopefully the manager and operator of that reservoir would understand that this piece of property over here is now leasing their water right in stream and therefore are not using stored water, and would provide them greater flexibility in their management, which may result in someone getting a little bit more stored water in a given year than they used to. But again, it depends on the management regime of that reservoir.
Representative Barnhart.
Yeah, this is a slightly different question.
Mm-hmm.
Could you give us some examples of why somebody would lease water into the stream for a short period of time, a few years? Why would you do that? What are some of the reasons you've seen?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, one example could be a farmer simply following the market, and maybe instead of needing to irrigate a piece of ground for a particular crop, they would be growing something that didn't require irrigation, as an example. There could be an irrigator that has a large piece of property and as part of their crop rotation is moving the irrigated crops around. Some operators may get involved in the Conservation Reserve Enhancement Program and may reserve some of that property and not farm it. And it has a water right on it, and they may lease it in stream at the time the property, that part of the property, is in the reserve program. So there's really a number of reasons, good reasons, that provide water users a lot of flexibility to manage their water, and at the same time provide some in-stream benefits. So it's been a very successful program for the department. And one of the reasons is that, as the chair and others know, there's a concern about permanently removing that water right from the property, mm-hmm. which would be the alternative under a permanent water right transfer. So this is an opportunity to have additional flexibility and to remove the water right in a limited, time-limited fashion. So it's been a win-win for the department and the stakeholders.
Adam. Follow up.
Yes.
When you lease it in stream, that doesn't mean you have to lease the whole water right, the whole volume of water, does it? You may you lease a portion of your water right in stream?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, yes, you could lease a portion. I don't want to get too technical about whether,
yeah.
Not necessarily a portion of the duty, but you could, if you had 100 acres and you wanted to lease 25 acres worth of water right in stream, you could do that, absolutely.
All right, let me, for Representative Barnhart's, information, supposing I got 160 acres in Circle, and it's potato land, and I have sufficient water right to irrigate that for potatoes, but potatoes require significantly more water than many of the other crops, and potatoes are on a 5-year rotation. So every 5 years, I need my full water right. So I could I lease some portion of that for the 4 years that I don't need it?
Mr. Chair, Ripson and Barnhart, yes, you could. In fact, you could dry land farm for 4 years, and then on the fifth year, grow potatoes. But without this bill, if you were relying on stored water to supplement your use, and you should be concerned about the stored water component of your water right.
Does that help, Representative?
Yes, sir, it does. Thank you.
Are there any other questions? Anybody else want to talk about this bill? Tell us why we don't want to do it.
Well, I'll speak now or forever hold your peace, because if we come back and hear it again, then you won't have the opportunity. Seeing no other interest in speaking to this bill, we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 185. And we'll open a work session on Senate Bill 56. And would you help us out with this, Sandy, what it is? And
thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, Senate Bill 56 had a public hearing last week on the 11th of May. As you recall, this bill prohibits a person from, well, a person to hold on to or occupy any portion of the boat aft or of transom while the boat is being operated or idled. It specifies some exceptions, and it creates a maximum fine of $360. The State Marine Board came before you and talked to us about teak surfing or platform dragging, which is what this is primarily speaking to, those activities. It does have a subsequent referral to Judiciary, and I have no amendments on this bill at this time.
Do you want a motion?
Is there any discussion on the bill? Anybody have any questions about it? Is our memory...
Well, Mr. Chair, my memory is that I had some questions with regards to boom skiing and that sort, or boom skiing, excuse me, for particular what water ski teachers use. That doesn't seem to be an issue from the testimony that we took. I would have never realized that being that close to the to an idling motor can cause that much damage with carbon monoxide. So I don't have any. I understand what the bill does, and I have read the bill and don't have any problems with it. And if you would like a motion, we can certainly accommodate that.
Yeah, we might as well have a motion. And
Mr. Chair, I'd move Senate Bill A and gross Senate Bill 56 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. It has a subsequent referral to Judiciary with a referral to Judiciary along the way.
Okay. Representative Kamel moves Senate Bill 56 to the House Judiciary with the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Any objections? The clerk would call a roll, please.
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Representative Brown?
Aye.
Representative Belzo?
Excused.
Representative Tomei?
Excused.
Vice Chair Dingfelder?
Aye.
Vice Chair Crummell?
Aye.
Chair Jensen?
Aye. Senate Bill 56, having received a majority vote, will go to the House Judiciary Committee for a final stamp of approval. I'm not real sure, given the judiciary load, what the probability of success of having a hearing over there on it. If it looks like there'll be a problem, we may ask the speaker to let us pull it back to committee and try to move it without that referral. Okay? With that, the work session on Senate Bill 56A is closed, and we will open a work session on Senate Bill 179.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 179 had a public hearing on April 25th. This allows the Water Resources Department to adopt rules to reduce fees for persons that are submitting materials to the department in an approved digital format, a.k.a. electronically. We received testimony in support of this. This bill is one of the department's efforts of streamlining their activities. During our public hearing, we received testimony to rescind the Ways and Means referral. We submitted documentation to the speaker who has approved that rescinding of the referral to Ways and Means, and we have that in our possession. And I have no amendments. We did have the fiscal impact statement that I believe you had in your first packet just basically speaks to the cost savings in the comment portion of their statement, and it's basically in general terms as far as money that will be saved by the department.
Any questions or discussion on Senate Bill 179?
Would you like a motion, Mr. Chair? Mr. Chair, I would move Senate Bill 179, that we rescind the referral to Ways and Means, and that Senate Bill 179 be moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Crummell moves Senate Bill 179 to the floor with a due pass recommendation with rescinding of the subsequent referral to the Ways and Means. There are questions, comments? I think, if I'm recalling correctly, the rationale on the part of the department was to try to encourage more people to file electronically, digitally? And
Adam Sussman for the department. Yes, that's correct, Chair Jensen.
So the assumption is that if they can do this with reduced fees, that there may be more people utilizing digital filing than currently do. It's not something they can't do right now, is it?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, there's a limited opportunity under current statute to submit digital applications, if you will, and receive a reduced fee, but it's a very limited opportunity to date.
But you wouldn't have to reduce the fees to allow them to file digitally.
That's correct.
So this is one of those giveaway to big business bills then?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I like to think not. There's any number of folks that could submit their information in a digital format and receive a small discount for doing so.
And should speak well about the department's current budget proposal as far as the governor's recommended budget is concerned. As to its adequacy, we can give away this money, and you don't have to respond to that. I do think, in seriousness with this, this is one of the type of things that we've been trying to do, that we'd like to do, more of, and streamlining government so that the constituents can do things more rapidly and that the department is able to respond more rapidly to this type of thing. So I would applaud the Water Resources Department for bringing the legislation forward, and thank them for that. And if there's no other comments or discussion, we would ask the clerk to call the roll.
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Representative Brown?
Aye.
Representative Dalto, excused. Representative Tomei, excused. Vice Chair Dingfelder?
Aye.
Vice Chair Crummell?
Aye.
Chair Jensen?
Chair Jensen votes aye, and having a constitutional majority, Senate Bill 179 is declared passed, and the chair would entertain a consent calendar.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 179 be placed on the consent calendar.
Representative Dingfelder has moved Senate Bill 179 be referred to the consent calendar. Do I hear any concern or objection? Hearing none, so ordered. And with that, Senate Bill 179, hearing on it is closed. Work session is closed. And do we have any announcements that we need for the good of the order, Sandy?
Not to my knowledge, Mr. Chair.
Announcements, we will not be in session on Friday. We will be in session on Wednesday. With that, the House Committee on Water is adjourned.